As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Athletic Support. It is Friday, July 3rd, and I am Arpin Basu, and I am without my normal partner, who actually usually does this intro. Marc-Antoine Godet is on vacation this week, and so will not be joining us. But instead of Marc-Antoine Godet, we have Mark Edwards from HockeyProspect.com, who recently released their 2020 Draft Black Book, which, in case you have not ever looked at it in years past, is the absolute vital draft resource that you need to have. Player profiles, as far as the eye can see. Very interesting and very independent rankings, I find. Like, I kind of like people who don't follow sort of the regular groupthink that tends to happen around leading up to the draft, and Mark and his team at Hockey Prospect, they never do that. It's a fully independent evaluation of these players. And so, Mark, welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We were just saying here before we got started, I've actually been kind of bored lately, so nice to get back at it here a little bit.
Yeah, it's good. It's always good to talk some hockey, and we just had the draft lottery, and so that has elicited a lot of interest in the draft in Montreal. But I want to talk to you about this amazing document that you were nice enough to send me. And just, can you give an idea of, you know, I know that you're often updating on Twitter, like, okay, it's coming. And then you send it. It's 765 pages long. Like, it's a massive, massive document, a massive resource, tons of research and tons of viewing and tons of evaluation and meetings go into it. Can you describe the process of putting this thing together?
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously it's not a one-man show here. I really always try and stress that. I'm blessed to have some people like a Jerome Berube, who's actually in Montreal, and he's about year 8 or 9 with us now. Brad Allen in his third year, who's been a big part of this. Dustin in Wisconsin, and Mike Farkas, who's also USHL-based, and Johan in Sweden. So the list goes on, and I'm not even mentioning all the guys that do all the hard work for the Q draft coverage, and obviously our OHL draft coverage as well. So there's a huge amount of support with us. And then just the Black Book itself, you know, a lot of the work is done through the year because the guys are doing their game reports, and we just kind of pile them all up. So they go into the book. But as far as the player profiles, There's a lot of them. Some of them, when you dig in there, you're going to see, I think Lucas Raymond's profile is about 3,000 words. That one was written by kind of a combo between Brad Allen and Johan in Sweden. And what we really tried to do this year, and it kind of started last year, but I think we did a better job of it this year, was, you know, you may not agree with the ranking, but we're going to tell you the why, and mm-hmm. why we see it this way. Why is, you know, in some cases, even though, why is he ahead of this guy or whatever. So, and then we try and go through our process of, you know, explaining the big categories we look at: the hockey sense, the compete, the skill, the skating, and some of the things that, you know, the aspects of those. So, you know, in hockey sense, decision making, anticipation, playmaking, deception, just the processing speed, compete, work ethic, you know, because a lot of people talk about their work ethic. Well, work ethic is kind of one of the aspects of our compete grade. So, you know, within that compete grade, when we talk about compete, you know, does he attack the net? Just want to be first on pucks and, you know, taking a hit to make a play and overall toughness, that sort of thing. And then, you know, I won't go through all these, but obviously the skill, the skating, that sort of stuff. So we try to encompass all that into the profiles and really give an overall picture of the prospect. So even if you might have a Lucas Raymond at number 4 and we've got him, at number 8, at least you've got an idea of what we see, and maybe a better idea of why we placed him where he did. And, you know, just in Lucas Raymond's name here, you know, he was a guy we had number 2 preseason. So
right.
Sometimes people are like, oh man, they don't like him, or, you know, they're out to lunch on him. It's like, we had him number 2 preseason. Like, we didn't want to drop him to 8 kind of thing, right. You know? So, and also too, it's like, we think he's the 8th best player in the draft. We don't dislike this player, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, and I know. And you know, you guys, or everyone in the draft community, I feel like it's, you know, you get ignored by the greater hockey community for what, 80% of the hockey year. And then you have like everyone's undivided attention for like 20% of the hockey year. And like the scrutiny comes from all these people who have not seen these players play other than maybe the World Junior Championships or some other event or the odd, you know, junior game here and there. And suddenly you're open to criticism when this is all you've been doing all year and working somewhat in obscurity. I think there is a pocket of fans who take interest in the draft all year round, but the great majority of them don't. And then they're only interested as soon as their NHL team stops playing and I'm talking about NHL fans primarily. I'm not including obviously the junior ranks, but I find that whole thing interesting because, you know, this is kind of a selfish topic of discussion because, you know, I take that as part of the it comes with the job. You know, like, people want to scrutinize my work. If they don't like what I wrote, they can say it, they can tell me right in the comments, they can tweet at me, they can and I don't, it doesn't bother me because it comes with the territory, and it's what I signed up for, and I know that you did as well. But it's a different dynamic where you're dealing with people who are clearly, like, not all of them, but some clearly have no idea what they're talking, like, have no base of reference to argue with your point other than, you know, oh, this ranking had this player ranked here and this ranking had him ranked there. Why do you have him 15 when they had him at 7 and 8? Like, how do you deal with just the lack of understanding or, frankly, ignorance of some people into your line of work and then having to suddenly have these people kind of thrust onto something that you've poured so much work into?
Well, I mean, you just have to kind of laugh it off and have a bit of a thick skin about it. I mean, we joked at one point, you know, we're going to get T-shirts made up saying it's not a mock and just walk around with those at the draft or something like that.
That's good.
But, you know, when you were talking there, it kind of reminded me of the Elias Pettersson year. So the Elias Pettersson year, I can remember I arrived in Bonnyville. That was a fun trip, by the way, about minus 35 for that week.
Wow.
But I arrived, and a scout I'm pretty tight with, you know, I mean, we're to the point, like, great friends and go golfing and everything. We had just released, excuse me, I had voice problems the last couple of days. We had just released our latest ranking, right before I flew out there, and, we moved Elias Pettersson to number 3, I think. And Twitter kind of went a little bit crazy. And
from where? Sorry. People, which, you moved him to 3 from where?
I can't remember where we had him the month before, actually, but we moved him up to three. I think
you moved
we probably
him up.
Had
okay,
him,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We moved him up to three, okay? And people went crazy, like, what are they doing and all that? So I actually arrived at the rink the first day, and this scout comes up to me. And I can't use the language he said, but, I mean, this is like a friend, and he came up, and he, you know, he said, bleep and bleep, bleep, bleep. And he was all serious. So I'm like, holy crap, what's going on? And he's like, you bleep, 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 bleep. And I'm like, yeah, I'm tight with this guy. I'm going, what the
hell? Right.
And he goes, you put Pettersson at number three. He goes, nobody's got him there. Da, 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 da. He goes, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Bleep, bleep, bleep. So it was, and then, you know, we're laughing and joking about it. But
right.
But it was just an example of, like, you know, all of a sudden he's put on the radar. Fans are like, who the hell is this? Like, what's he doing up there on this list? And that,
right.
And then if you remember, that was Montreal World Junior. So I came in and I watched like the 26th, 27th, 28th or something like that. Pettersson, if I'm remembering, didn't score. He might not even had a point, but he didn't score. But I thought he was really good. He was a snake bitten and all that. So we just left him. I think I might have dropped him to four, like one spot, something like that, which was a month, you know, mid-January ranking. So now fast forward, okay? And there was also Heiskanen, I believe. That was the same draft, right?
Yeah.
And we had way up there too. Had him way up there too. So fast forward to the draft. And take in mind, okay, we're getting abused for this list, how out to lunch we are. So fast forward to June, and the first, I think it was six picks unfold. And they're exactly our ranking. And I'm just sitting there like, here we are. I constantly say we're not trying to predict the draft. It's not a mock. And the first six are exactly like, well, guess what? All of a sudden, our list was the best list on the planet. And these guys are awesome and all this stuff. And it's just simply because it unfolded. And if it happened to be a year where those were six horrible picks by those six teams and we had it matched, like, our list would have stunk, right?
Sure.
Like, it's You get the feedback like, oh, Hockey Prospect had 28 of the 31, you know, first rounds and all. It doesn't mean anything if the teams made bad picks and we were right along with them, right? So you don't know if your list is good until a few years after. Yeah, there's certain things where you're like, we're confident in this player. Last year we had Bobby Brink at 15 or something like that. What did he go, like, maybe 40-ish or 45?
Yeah, he went in the second round. Yeah, he went in the second round for sure. Yeah,
yeah, and that's fine because a lot of it is kind of like a draft philosophy too. So I'll just throw the Bruins. Okay, they were picking late first, and Brink would have probably, without me looking at it, he probably would have been our top player available. I'm guessing at that point, and they took Beecher, right? So for me, Beecher was upside a third line and maybe even just going to be a fourth liner, but probably a 90% chance he's playing in the NHL.
Right.
But we wouldn't have taken Beecher because we want to use a draft and try and get those top six guys and, you know, top three, four defensemen. So we would have just, even if we thought it was 50-50 for a Brink making our top six, you know, and hitting, we would have taken the swing there for the fence, so to speak. So that's just like a philosophy thing. Whereas the Bruins said, let's get a guy who's going to play. You know, and it's that simple between, you know, the ranking, for example. Maybe they could have seen Brink exactly the same as we did and just decided to go the safe route instead of taking a bit of a swing there.
Well, it also depends on it depends on your prospect pool as well, right?
That too. Yeah. And we don't have a team, so that changes things a little bit for us. So we just kind of every year kind of take the attitude, like, let's try and get their top six guys. You can't get these top pairing D. You can't get these top six forwards, right? There are especially top first line forwards, that sort of thing. So you got to get those high end players on the roster through the draft for the most part. You know, there's some exceptions on how to get them, but it isn't easy as you know, covering this league nonstop. So you got to go to the draft, and that's why a Sanderson's going to go really high because he's going to play 25 minutes a night, and it's like this undervalued, you know, position to me right now, the minute eaters. And last year we had Sider at 10 and it was way higher than anybody. And like, we had him four spots
too
late.
You underrated him. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I find so interesting. But, I just want to say, like, you just finished saying all this stuff and it's really cool. I find the explanation into your methodology, I guess, when at the beginning of the Black Book, and your little note to your scouts that, you know, I want you to act like your job is on the line. You know, I want you to take this as seriously as an NHL team takes it. And I don't think the average fan realizes just how, A, how difficult the job it is, and B, how that's how NHL scouts see it. Like, their name is going to be attached to this prospect throughout this prospect's career. The public won't know about it, but inside hockey, they'll know about it. And that's your reputation. And that's on the line every single year at every single draft. And I found that really fascinating that you included that, and that you put your own scouts, you know, I don't know if you're threatening their jobs based on how they perform, but you want them to think like that. And so I thought that was really an interesting addition, like a little interesting to read before reading a ranking, because it's in the NHL context, it's their livelihood. If they hit wrong too often, teams aren't going to want them around.
Yeah, it was the Owen Tippett draft. I mean, this is a player with high-end skill and all that, and we won't revisit that whole draft year. But that was actually a year where I just kind of one day said, you know, I can't see myself sitting in this Mississauga rink next year with my name on his back, so to speak, right? Like, it'll make me really nervous next year. And if you just think about it like that, if you replace his name with yours, that you're attached to him, and maybe, you know, who knows where you took him, how high or something like that. But just when you kind of think of it like that, like, I'm attached to this guy now, like, you know, my reputation's on whether he's going to perform or not. And he just had that flakiness and lack of compete at time and all that kind of stuff that we look for. You know, we go hockey sense first, compete second with skill. Skill and compete are really kind of one and, you know, together. But we just put that compete, just that little slight edge ahead. And then skating. I'm not trying to tell you skating's not important, that it's fourth on our list, but you know, like a Bobby Brink was as butt ugly a skater as you can get, but he was in our rating system, eights across the board, the other stuff that we could put up with his sort of average skating. The one thing, as ugly as he was, he won a lot of races and got there, right? But yeah,
which speaks to compete.
Yeah, I'm putting the guys back, you know, what you started talking about here, it's huge for me, and trust me, they're probably sick of listening to me because I constantly drive home the put yourself on the draft floor, and I do it to myself. Jacob Perreault, I had as high as eighth on my list. And then I started putting myself on the draft floor, and I'm thinking of the games where he's coasting back into the zone and doing that sort of thing. And I'm like, I can't take him eighth with the talent behind him in this draft, with the risk involved that he could be a total miss. Like, they're just too good behind him in this draft. But that said, I think we got him 16th or something like that.
You have
like
a 16th,
team that's the team that's going to get him somewhere, wherever he goes, and who knows, man, he could go eighth for all I know, but he can end up being, if that kid just decides I'm going to, because he will compete at times, like, flat out, and, you know, I mentioned it yesterday in our own little podcast. For him, it was the work ethic aspect of that compete rating. So in other words, he's not afraid to attack the net. He's not afraid to go into traffic, take a hit to make a play, all that kind of stuff. It was just a work ethic up and down where it's like sometimes he's busting his butt to get back to his own zone and competing in his own zone. And at other times it was like hitting the red line and lift up and coast in, right? So those are hard to rank. That's one of the hardest things to rank, is which one's he going to be? Is he going to flick the switch and compete all the time? Or is he going to be, you know, lazy half the time? And that's really difficult to rank. But he's a guy that could be the fourth or fifth best player in this draft if he decides that he's going to just work ethic at a 7 rating on our scale kind of all the time.
Right. I always think of Ryan Getzlaff's draft here and how a lot of the things you just said about Perreault, I think, were being said about Getzlaff when he was playing in junior. And as it turns out, I think Getzlaff was just bored in junior. Like, it was just too easy for him. So when he did get to the next level, he was able to flip that switch because he wasn't by far the best player anymore. But, you know, it wasn't easy for him anymore. And I would find, like, that would be a really difficult thing to identify, right? Like, which player, A, is it a good thing that a player just decides to get bored and coast because it's too easy? Or should he be competing at the highest level no matter what? And B, how do you even spot that? Like, how do you even identify that? Like, it's just, I don't know how common that is, but it seems to me like, you know, I always think of a really intelligent kid in school who's not challenged by the curriculum and starts goofing off in class. You know, that's how I feel about I think some players in junior probably take that approach to it where like, I'm so good. Like I can coast and still get my points and still help my team win. So I don't even need to do that stuff. I mean, do you have a method for identifying that in a player or is that just random?
No, I think it just gets, I have my coaching experience, you know, to rely on too, where you know, I coached for about 19 years, right from little friggin' Adam kids to junior A. And one thing I'd say is the players, not many of them change, you know, so when it was a player that maybe, you know, I was coaching and he had this incredible talent, but you couldn't get it out of him every game, like, you know, the whole year or maybe 2 years with him, and I couldn't make a dent on them, you know, to this play to a certain level. We had a player named Will Nye, who was about 6'4", skated like he would have been an 8 on our skating scale, 8 out of 9. And just he had NHL scouts coming to see him with our junior A Canadians in his draft year. And, you know, his compete would have been an 8 at times and a 3 at times on our scale. And I couldn't give you a reason to this day why he just decided some days he wasn't in the mood and other days he was. And he, you know, obviously he didn't get drafted and he just kind of fizzled out of hockey, period. But for the most part, I just kind of usually go with they don't change. Ryan McLeod always comes to mind with playing on the perimeter. You know, and we have a saying in our meetings, like if this kid flicks the switch, we're going to look really dumb. Right. And that's a horrible thing when you're sitting there going, you know how easy it could be if he just decided I'm going to start attacking the net. I'm going to start playing inside. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this instead of playing the perimeter. Or in Perreault's case, I'm going to stop coasting at the red line and coast in. And again, I want to stress with Perreault, he's not like lazy all the time. Right? It's sometimes a shift to shift, or it's this game he's off, this game he's on. My last viewing of the season of him was in Sarnia against Guelph. His compete would have been at least a 7 on our scale that day. He was absolutely dynamite. And it was one of the reasons I was like, okay, I got to dig in here and go back and watch 10 or 12 more games on tape and just kind of see how many games is he floating a bit? How many games is this compete at this level? And that's what we ended up doing.
Yep. Now, it's great that you're actually using Perreault as an example. It's actually a perfect segue. It's almost as if we planned it, which we did not. Let's make it clear. But he's using Perreault as an example. He's ranked 16th on your list. And the big debate in Montreal right now is obviously lose the play-in. You have a shot at Lafreniere. But even if you don't get Lafreniere, you're locked in at number 9. Win the play-in, and the best you could pick is 16th. So we've been trying to sort of quantify, and Marc-Antoine did a lot of work dealing with a whole bunch of different things, trying to figure out in this draft the actual tangible difference between, at the time we were looking between 8 and 16. Now it turns out it's 9 and 16. But you know, for you, where have you identified any tiers to this draft? And where, like, where, what are the borders of those tiers as far as yours concerned?
Yeah, these have changed a little bit over the last few months too, because I haven't even said it here. This is an incredible first round. And if you were interviewing me even mid to late November, I would have had a much different answer to that question. It's right. Funny how just scheduling and stuff, I was going.
Well, actually, sorry, before you answer the question, can you describe how difficult it is to answer that question without a U18 World Championship, without OHL playoffs, without WHL, QMJHL playoffs, without the European playoffs, without all the stretch drive scouting that you guys do? How has that impacted your ability to answer that question?
It is a little harder because I like to see, you know, when you're trying to decide, maybe it's like a who's 13th, who's 14th or that sort of thing. And you get to watch some playoffs and see some playoff performances and who really dug in and got better in the playoffs. And then obviously for some Euros, in this year, it would have been in Plymouth. It would have been nice to see some guys on North American ice, you know, that sort of thing. You know, there's players I just haven't seen, you know, play on smaller ice. So that's another factor. Obviously, getting some extra live viewings on some Euros. I mean, I'm not flying to Europe. We don't make any secret of it. I'm not flying to Germany to see one player last year and 3 this year. That's just not in our budget. Okay, sure. So I mean, I go to Europe, I do go out west, I do that stuff, but it's to see some multiple players. I have to make it on my budget a worthwhile trip. And for it being in Plymouth 4 hours from me, this year, which was nice and easy. It's a real drag to not see some of the, you know, extra live viewings on some Euros. And Germany was, you know, slated to be in it this year, which was just a great fluke because they're not always in it. So that would have been nice. But yeah, it definitely changed the spring. I watched more video just in the first probably 3 weeks of March after the shutdown than I probably watched in the past 2 years. And I do watch video. It's not like I don't use it, but just ridiculous amount this year. And we got a software called Instat. So we can literally just create playlists of whatever we want to see. So I could watch the first pass of a D-man that he made all year and just watch like literally 220 passes in a row and watch a half hour. It takes a half hour to watch the kid make his first pass or watch, you can separate it by gaining the zone by pass, gaining the zone by carrying the puck and watch a D carry it in. Jacob Pro, we were talking about, I think I watched every shot of his. Well, I know I watched every shot of his. It took about 39 minutes to watch every shot he took during the season. And there might have been a game or two they didn't cover, but for the most part, I watched every shot he took the season. It took 39 minutes. So it was a thing of beauty.
Wow.
Cole Perfetti, I think there was 90 goals on there for the past 2 years. So I watched all of them from the past 2 years. I swear, with the exception with maybe 15 goals, you felt like you were watching a highlight reel, not just all of his goals. It was incredible.
Right.
So
that's how varied they were, you mean?
Just how high end some of his goal scoring ability is, right? And then, you know, so there's obviously the empty netters are included, so you take a few of those off each player, but Perreault and Perfetti stand out as some of the most, you know, let's call them translatable goals to the NHL level,
right?
You know, they're beating anybody, some of those goals. So, I'll go back to the tiers, I guess, here.
I wanted you to answer that first because, you know, there's a certain grain of salt aspect to everyone's rankings this year, I think, because so much goes into the months that were lost that, you know, the question of tiers and every question that I'm asking you is almost unfair, but this is reality. So, I mean, where would your tiers be in say the first half or, you know, in the first round in general?
Yeah, and honestly, the reason it's difficult is just because it's so tight. Like, I just can't remember grouping the players and having such a difficult time ranking as this season. So I'll rattle it off here. So for us, it's a 1-2. It was Lafreniere, Stützle. And then Byfield, Perfetti, Sanderson would be a next little grouping. And then this grouping was the real fun one. So the Quinn, Jarvis, Raymond, Rossi, Holtz, and then throw Askarov into that. Okay, right. so one of my scouts had Askarov like top three or four. I forget what he had on this final list. But for the group, Askarov would be in that group. We separate like the teams do, or most of the teams put a different list. So Askarov's our number one goalie. But yeah, that Quinn Jarvis, Raymond, Rossi, Holtz, they jumbled around there from, you know, let's call it the shutdown in various order. Quinn actually pretty much held his own there at six. I don't remember moving him, but the Jarvis, Raymond, Rossi, Holtz, they were probably all at those different numbers there at some point.
Right.
Then we'll go the 2D, Schneider, Drysdale, which, you know, that was raised some eyebrows when Schneider was out of Drysdale. And then the group, so the 13, excuse me, the 13 to 18. So Robbins, Greg, Reichel, Perreault, Gundler, Mercer. That's probably another group there. I'm just doing these really quick here. The next group, I'd probably go a 19 to 23-ish, so the Brisson to Amirov. And then I'll just go 24 all the way to, let's say, 35, because that was actually really tight, just doing that, the 20 to 30-ish, for lack of a better group. So you can see, like, you know, and I mean, we could talk, you know, this could have been a month ago and they would have been a little bit different here and there by a player or two here and there. So it really jumped around. You know.
Well, what's really striking is to me is seeing Drysdale as the third defenseman on the list, seeing Schneider so high, seeing Sanderson at five it's not like I haven't seen that elsewhere, but I mean it's Sanderson's been a name that's been sort of linked to Montreal through various reasons. I don't know why, but it just has been, just because I think because often he winds up eighth or ninth on people's lists. And so I think that's actually the only... No, it's clearly not. So, but it's interesting.
I don't think
that,
he will. It's not,
well,
it's,
I don't, it's, I don't, I don't, and I don't honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't either, just based on how he's been trending and his second half of the season was so remarkable, right? Until it got shut down. What are your concerns about Drysdale? I mean, you don't have huge concerns. You ranked him 12th. He's still a very good player, but why do you have him behind a Schneider, for instance?
Yeah, so Drysdale is a really interesting one because I think most of the, you know, you talked earlier about the people that just, they see these guys maybe at World Junior or something. Well, that was his best hockey of the whole season, World Junior, mm-hmm. right? If he played like that all year, he'd probably be up a few notches. But honestly, he still wouldn't be up in the 4 range or 5 where you see him on the list for us, because we just don't think that he's got the defensive ability to play that 25 minutes against the Crosbys of the world, right? So that the other team's best. And we don't see the PP1 kind of projection for him. So we see great mobility, smart player, moves pucks really well, passes it around pretty well as well. So all the things that kind of still make him, like, you know, our 12th favorite guy in this draft, but right. just not that high-end offensive productivity that's going to make him a PP1 stud. Like when we saw the Makar comparisons and different things here and there on Twitter or wherever we see them, like he's just not in that league offensively. Right. He's not that guy. It's not even close for us. So that's the kind of guys that we would have, as in when we had Heiskanen way up there and that sort of thing, right? Like mm-hmm. where we thought they were, those type of things. And Sanderson doesn't have that PP1 stud ability either, we don't think. But what he does have is the ability to play ridiculous minutes a la Seider. So, you know, I actually was thinking all along, whoever's picking fourth might take Sanderson. And I think that's probably a possibility with Detroit. Can you imagine Sanderson with Seider?
Yeah.
Some scouts were joking about this. Like, they've got half their game, half the 60 minutes wrapped up with 2D now. And it's right. like, okay, move on to the next project, right? Like, yeah. let's get our... So that's kind of, you know, our thinking there. And I'm not predicting Drysdale's going to last till the 12th pick, you know. At all, it's not a mock, but that's kind of where we thought he fits in. And actually, it's right around where we had him preseason. And my biggest question for me personally, as I was going out, you know, to watch these guys starting last fall, was I need to figure out if Drysdale has that higher end offensive ability. This is not a player I disliked. I watched him. My first time I viewed him was actually in Bud Gardens in London in a London Green and Gold tournament in his minor midget year. Mm-hmm. I hadn't talked to one of our OHL draft scouts about anybody, and I just watched the Toronto Marlies and put on, and this kid comes out from behind his net and makes a head fake and beats two guys and skates down the ice. I'm like, oh, this Drysdale kid's pretty good, keep watching him. And you know, he ended up being one of the top picks in the draft and all that, and he's made a name for himself and he's a great player, but I just don't see that high-end offensive ability. His compete in Erie, there was some laziness. It reminded me of Bouchard a bit in London. Mm-hmm. And like I said, just when you think about him matching up against some of the top NHL players, some of these greats, just don't project him right now. And that could change. These kids change and get better.
Sure. I think another guy that I think Canadiens fans, you know, unless they're really avid kind of draft nerds, Seth Jarvis is a guy that I don't know a whole lot about, to be honest. And I see him popping up high on people's lists and seems to me like a guy that might possibly interest the Canadiens. Is he for sure an NHL center in your eyes? Cause I think there's been some question as to like, cause people have looked back, they think about this with Rossi as well. And they try to think back at how many 5'9" centers have really thrived in the NHL. And I try to think of them and there aren't that many. And so for Seth Jarvis and Marco Rossi, but Seth Jarvis in particular, cause I'd like to hear what you have to say about him, but like, do you see him for sure in the middle of the ice, or like, could he become a winger at the next level?
Winger. We project him as a winger.
You project
line
him
drive
as a winger.
And winger. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Line drive and winger. So this, every single shift you watch him, like you, there's not, you know, if I just sat you down in front of that team and didn't tell you a thing, like you would have noticed Jarvis in the first shift you saw him. Like, right. He just stood out, you know, on every shift sort of thing. And so he's got some Gallagher in him, you know, convenient talking Montreal Canadiens, obviously here crowd. Sure. He's got some Gallagher in him for sure. And he reminded me a little bit of Marner with some of the agility on his skates. On the forecheck, he was kind of just a menace for D, you know, being the first man in, and his ability to, I remember Marner, and I saw so much of Marner in London. Marner was just a menace on D, like, you know, just as, even if they went D to D, his ability to use his agility on his skates and get to the next D and just pressure them constantly and take away their time and space, and really saw that a lot with Jarvis as well. And then he's incredibly competitive, like just absolutely determined, and then there's skill to go along with it. So you see the package of what we look for: incredibly smart, the compete through the roof, he's got the skill, and then the skating's very good as well. So again, no huge weakness other than the size. We project him as a, you know, a line driving winger that can play in that top six. And he just kept on, the more we watched, he just kept moving up there. So
do you think Rossi will play on the wing at the next level?
We project him as a winger as well. Just because he's not a bad skater by any means, but he's also not a fantastic skater. So when you combine the size, his skating ability, and the other thing is, like, he's kind of what he's going to be. I think this kid is, you know, interviewed him and he's a rock. Like, he is solid. He's strong in his core and really built. And he's already been like a pro training and preparing for this to be his job. Like, he's in great shape, a strong, very strong 5'8.5" player. So I don't have concerns about him and his strength or anything like that. But I think he's also close to what he's going to be already. Right. Whereas, say, for example, a Perfetti is like a, you know, by comparison, almost like a little boy, right? Baby face, not filled out at all, that sort of thing. And there's room to grow. I'm not saying he's going to, but at least with Perfetti, you can see that there is some room for growth and strength and all that sort of thing.
Okay, so I think we're going to keep the Lafreniere stuff for the end, okay? Because there's one question I would like you to try and answer, and I don't know if you necessarily can, but based on this draft, so the Canadians have either the number 1, number 9, or number 16 picks, but let's say for now that they have the number 9 pick. That would also mean they would have something like, I think it's the 39th and 40th pick in the second round, and then they have another pick much later in the second round. So a question I got quite often in my mailbag was, would it be worth it for the Canadian? Obviously, I'm fully cognizant of the fact that this all depends on how the draft turns out ahead of them at number 9. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if they were to move up to pick someone at 7, is that 39th pick, is that too valuable an asset to use to move up two spots at that range based on the crop of players they have that are available this season?
Okay, so I guess if you look at the grouping that I mentioned earlier, the 6 to 10, so the Quinn, Jarvis, Raymond, Rossi, Holtz, and I talked about how tight it was. I guess it would have to be maybe if one of the players from the, you know, the Byfield, Perfetti, Sanderson group. Again, this is off our list and our team needs that we don't really technically have any. But those right. are the kind of questions, right? If you're desperate for a D, you're really lacking that in your organization or whatever, and Sanderson somehow was the guy that slipped, then yeah, maybe that's a decision you want to make. I guess what I would say is that those two picks, I think there's a chance this year you can get some pretty good players with those early seconds. Right. Because, you know, you remember, this is like a team style list. And when I say team style list, I just mean, you know, you're just crossing names off. And, you know, when Montreal picks at, let's say it's 39, I don't know the exact picks. I know they have like Chicago's and what, St. Louis or something like that, plus their own. So let's say for us, it was like, you know, maybe it's our number 21 player is all we're at when we get to 39, right? So you're getting our right. technically our 21st best player on our list at 39. Like, it's not going to be who they have at 39 on their list, right? They could be
of course not, 20 still.
Yeah. So, you know, when you think about it that way, they could still get some guys pretty high on their list at those spots. So it's got to be really someone you're hungry for there to get rid of one of those picks to move up.
Yeah, because I could see a scenario where Sanderson's available at 7. The Devils have no picks in the second or third round. And I could see Montreal kind of jumping on that scenario, if that's actually what happens. But it's, yeah, I kind of agree with you that, and the Canadiens have always held this philosophy that they want to keep as many darts as they can. And especially with players, you know, who risk falling into that group. I mean, you know, it's funny that you mentioned 21 at random, but a guy like Luke Evangelista would really interest the Canadiens, I would think, you know, and he's 21 on your list, could be there at 39 or 40. Like, it could happen. Who knows? I mean, I was interested to see Holloway so low on your list compared to other people, but that's also a guy who if you fell into that range, I'm sure the Canadiens would jump all over that. So it's obviously based on how things play out, but it's generally speaking, you know, I mean, if you have 3 second round picks, do you feel those are more valuable assets to move up, or are you inclined? Yeah. Well, okay. Well, it's in this draft,
in this draft, they're a little more. Yeah. In this draft, again, like if you're, let's say it was, I don't know, like let's say ours, because we've got a bit of an outlier with Tristan Robbins. Okay. So let's say it was our list. And let's say the Habs list was Robbins. So now let's say that he's got to, I don't know, we'll say 30 and he's still available. So they're looking at their 13th player in Robbins. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they've got, say, pick 39. You might say, like, do we want to risk this anymore? Like, if we can throw a second here and get up and get our 13th player at 30th overall. And again, I don't play these games too often, but that just using our list here as an example, where if a 13th player got to 30 and maybe we have to give up one of our seconds and go get our 13th best player in this draft, that's kind of sounds a little bit enticing to me. But right. In this draft, with what they might get with those picks, like, they might get some pretty high guys on their list anyway. Like I mentioned, like say it was 21 and for us it's Evangelista, who I really like. Yeah, you might want to just sit tight. So I think it has to be some player that just you're in love with and he starts sliding, right? You say, hey, like if we can go get this guy now at this spot, let's do it.
Now, I don't want to be like a Debbie Downer here, but there you know, I mentioned Holloway as being one of them, but there are a number of players who are kind of lower on your list than there are on several other lists, like Anton Lindell, for instance, Hendrix Lapierre, you know, there's a few others, but I mean, to what extent, well, let's just take a specific example, like Lindell for you. Is there, I've seen him referred to as a safe pick in the sense, like, you know what he will be, but he won't be more than that. So keep that in mind. Like you're getting a sure thing, but you're not getting any more than that. Is that fair?
Sure thing. I wouldn't go that far. I think that there's a high chance that this kid plays. Mm-hmm. But again, we talked about earlier about the philosophy and swinging for the fences a little bit. So if you look at the players in front, and I'm not saying the guy's right in front of them, but when you get into those guys at 13 to 18 tier, okay, we're looking at guys there that we think can all be top six type players. Okay. With Lindell, we had him pegged as a third liner, and that's kind of where it's going to max out. And again, these are projections, and they're not carved in stone.
He's your Beecher.
Yeah. Well, no, kind of. he's higher than Beecher, but yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to put that on him because I wasn't the biggest Beecher fan to start with, but yeah.
Okay.
So I won't use the Beecher comparison with him.
No, but philosophically speaking, he's...
But philosophically, we see him as a third line center. He's incredibly smart. Incredibly responsible. There's a ton to like about him. And again, he's still our 25th best player in the draft, right? But we just didn't see enough of the higher end offensive upside to put him ahead of some of the guys in front of him who we feel do have that sort of upside and can be a lot better chance of being top six forwards on their future team. In the case of you mentioned his name. So Holloway, I went down to Penn State and saw him. I saw him at the program. I saw him at the camp. I think I saw him 4 times live, plus really dug in him on tape because he was driving us a bit crazy. So for him, it was a little bit of hockey sense, didn't think that he's going to be able to stay playing center in the NHL. Much more suited for the wing. Okay. Yeah, not dynamic enough, not making guys around him better. So, you know, you start hearing a few things I'm throwing out here, and all of a sudden, again, like these are like Misak there, Lapierre, you mentioned, Bork, I love Bork, you know, these are guys around him, and Paterka, Lindell, we just mentioned, these are the guys that are around him that he was up against in this tier here. So these are not slouches by any means. These are a lot of these guys we're thinking are playing. So all of a sudden, 29 is feeling like 19 of last year, so to speak, if you know what I mean. So, again, this is not a bad hockey player, and I don't dislike him, but it got pretty competitive here, even through the 20s and early 30s. Yeah. It's deep. It's really deep.
There's a lot of volume here, yeah.
Yeah.
And how much when things are so close, as they apparently are this year, how much do you look at their birthday, if at all?
Yeah, well, there's so many late birthdays this year that it made it easier because it was just like, well, they're all late. Yeah, I guess for a Jarvis, like he stands out amongst some 2001s there, like around him. But there's so many, like a Schneider and Rossi and Quinn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, it's really striking when you look like, at. Yeah, they're right in front of me.
Like Gunler, so Gunler. Yeah, Gunler, Mercer, Brisson, like, I think Zeri is one, if memory serves.
Amirov,
like,
Lundell, there's tons.
It was ridiculous this year. So it made it easier from the standpoint there were so many that they were on almost an equal footing. But, like, I don't sit there and look at the three-month difference and stuff like that. I guess if there's a tie, we'd start talking about it more. But we just kind of, let's evaluate what we see first, and we'll worry about the birth dates and that kind of stuff a little bit later, and if it's going to factor in to try and break a tie. We went deeper into the how do we break this tie this year, and a lot of them, you know, from interviews where, you know, I interviewed this kid, really liked him, tried to interview, couldn't get a hold of this kid. You know, it was that tight at times, right? So, and the teams aren't going to have the player where they didn't get to interview him the way I, you know, had the idea. Jacob Pro was one I really wanted to interview, and it just didn't happen. Whereas, you know, who knows, maybe if I had interviewed him for a half hour and he blew me away, maybe I would have been more confident to take him at 8, where I told you I had him at one point, you know?
Right. And so Lapierre's your last A grade at 27. Mm-hmm. Is that uncommon to have 27 A's on your list?
I don't remember us having that many in recent drafts, that's for sure. I think last year we had 18, maybe 19. I might have gone to 19. Okay. And again, that's all subjective too, right? Like
everything's subjective. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. But so Lapierre is a really difficult one because of, you know, it's again, like, did he have concussions? Didn't he? Is he going to have more?
Yeah.
I mean, at one point he admitted to having them, and that would have been 4 in 2 years. He was not very good in my viewings. But again, like, This is a player who makes guys better around him, right? Like he's a really good distributor of the puck. I don't think he's going to be a big goal scorer, but very, very intelligent player, which we look for. So there's a lot to like about him too. And I talked to a team really close to the release of our book, and talked to a scout. So I guess all the teams got a huge report, medical report. I didn't talk to anybody who had kind of given me any info on their team doctor's take on it. And so there was no help for me on that. So we just kind of threw him in an area where it was like, well, this is closer to a ranking if it was bad news, I guess would be a better way for me to say it. So difficult to rank.
It's acknowledging the risk involved, I guess.
Yeah. But he wouldn't have been top 10 anymore for us if he was totally healthy. It maybe would have been, you know, closer to top 17 or something like that, I'd say.
Okay.
And that's without a ton of thought, because he kind of went on the back of our radar there for a while there, because there was just so little. I mean, I mentioned Instat earlier. I ended up watching all of his games because they're just so quick to go through. And you know, he wasn't
so
awesome.
Few of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One trip in Chicoutimi, like did the whole long trip to Chicoutimi, and like he just stunk that day. You wouldn't have taken him in the fifth round. You know, he was just so passive and just out of the game, just did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was fear. You know, you start getting concussions, it's got to affect you mentally and digging in.
So. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's, and plus he was not, you know, was he ever really fully healthy this year? I don't know if he was. It seems kind of nebulous. His whole health status all season has been sort of, you know, I talked to Mark Denis a lot, who's part of the ownership group in Chicoutimi, and he's part of their hockey ops, and we've talked about it, and you know he's really upset about the Q canceling the season, even though you know he's not upset about them canceling the season, but he's upset that this happened because LaPierre would have had a chance to really show himself in the playoffs because he was finally fully healthy and what have you. And so yeah, he's definitely kind of a wild card this year that I'd be interested.
I feel for the kid, it's a real shame for the kid. It's I hope he goes in the first round, you know, and it'll be a little bit of a pick me up for the kid who's had one, you know, just horrible experience in his NHL draft year. It's a real shame.
Yeah, it is. So let's go away from that and talk about. I think we've made our listeners wait long enough, but the guy at the top of the draft. I got a few questions for you about Alexis Lafrenière, and obviously here in Montreal. The possibility, the somewhat minute possibility, but still a better possibility than there was before that the Canadiens might get him, obviously has people very excited. First question would be, was there any consideration putting Stützle in front of him?
Yes.
Why?
Just because I think it was close enough that we couldn't just, you know, pack our bags and say, yeah, that's fine. Lafrenière won, right? I mean, you're not doing it justice, your process justice, if you think that there's a chance and then you just get lazy and don't bother. So, yeah,
I guess the question was there any real debate on that? Like, was it debatable?
No, we didn't have, it was not close enough that we sat there like humming and hawing. Like, for example, last year, huge debate, okay?
Mm-hmm,
so,
right.
There was no lengthy meeting. There was none of that, but there was enough of a, we really like Stützle. Let's make sure here. And then we made sure. And it was like, yeah, it's Lafrenière. And there was no debate. Yeah. So I don't want to mislead that there was tight enough that we're having a big debate and took an extra hour in meeting or something like that. There was not even 5 minutes, but there was enough through the process, let's say from March at the shutdown to say, we got to make sure. And so we, you know, watched enough games and did enough homework to make sure that Lafrenière was our one, yes. And then Stützle was closer to Lafrenière, as you can tell by the tier, than he was to number three for us.
Right.
So it was a 1-2, but it was clearly Lafrenière. You know, I know some scouts out there who thought that maybe if Detroit was scouts from other teams, I want to specify not Detroit scouts, but scouts from some other teams who just, you know, and fun, you're, you know, waiting for a game to start or whatever, and some pregame chatter and stuff. And they thought that maybe Yzerman would try and go Stützle. Like, there's a lot of scouts who think Stützle might have the higher ceiling, but the risk of whether he reaches or not is another whole topic. And then Stützle might be able to play center, whereas Lafrenière himself just says he's comfortable on the wing. He likes the wing. So.
So what makes, in your mind, what makes Lafrenière unique compared to other top ranked prospects heading into the draft? What is his unique quality?
There's no real weakness, right? I mean, his weakness would probably be his skating, and it's not like it's a bad skater. It's just, you know, so for our grades, for example, right? So we use this 3 to 9 scale, 3 being poor, 9 being elite. So we've got his as 9 hockey sense, 8 compete, 9 skill, 6 skater, and then 8 is miscellaneous. So the 8 just encompasses size, athleticism, that sort of thing, strength.
Right.
Okay. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you can see there's not really a weakness there. And even that 6, like the skating's come a long way, right? Jerome was telling a story yesterday. Jerome Brube is our Montreal based guy.
Yes.
Who's been with us for forever. And covered the Q draft. And so he was telling a story yesterday about, you know, going all the way back to Bantam, where Huberto was actually cut from Team Quebec. And he ended up getting back on the team because of an injury. So he was not this superstar right down from novice, like you hear about some kids, right, where they were just always like getting their ridiculous amount of goals and all that sort of thing. But one of the things that just even since coming into the queue that's really improved is that skating. And we have it as a six. And this is not something where these grades, we add them all up and get a total and debate or anything. They're simply a way for our scouts to give us their viewing of the player in a nutshell. And then we, as a group, debate their final rating there. And then there's, you know, there's different levels of a six skater. There's different levels of a six skill. Like it's, you know, we weren't going to create a 1 to 100 and this guy's a 97, this guy's a 94, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, it's just to give a quick glance, when you look across, you can clearly see we like his skill. We like his hockey sense. And in his case, we like pretty much everything. And I think the skating really progressed. The other area, and Jerome noted this, and Jerome wrote the profile for the Black Book, obviously, seeing him for God knows how many years here, but with the defensive awareness, his defensive game has progressed as well. And just being a little bit more on top of his defensive responsibilities and that sort of thing.
It's, you know, I don't want to say it's completely rare, but it's somewhat rare to have, you know, the top forward or the top player available not be a center. It's you know, I could think of Patrick Kane and I mean Taylor Hall, I guess. You know, there's it happens on occasion, but it's rare. And it's funny that you know, the Canadians have sort of, and this market is fixated with the Canadians finding a number one center. And my feeling is, like, if you take Patrick Kane and put him with a pretty good number one center, like let's say an average number one center, well, that number one center is suddenly above average in my mind, because he's playing with Patrick Kane. And so, like, it's so is Lafreniere that type of a guy that could just basically elevate his line, the players on his line, to his level? Or is he more of a just sort of an individual force? Like, how would you characterize him in that sense?
I think that he's answered that question in the queue. That he's made guys around him better in the queue, right? He's elevated, not to pick on some players, but some sort of more average players, and really inflated their numbers, and just made guys around him better, which is, to me, you know, one of the best compliments when you're looking for the greats is when they make guys better. One of the things I loved about the season, and it's kind of funny too, and I've said this on a couple interviews, but he wasn't very good in my games just by fluke, right? And I preface it by saying, I saw a lot of Connor McDavid in his, you know, in his junior days, and I saw McDavid have off days too. So I'm not trying to, you know, paint the picture like I don't like Lafreniere, but I just saw a couple of his bad days in the queue. You know, one was in Quebec City. I forget what the other game was, but there were games where he just didn't have his best day. But one of the things I loved when I started watching the World Junior was just the presence he had and the power game, and he had like a real attitude and really kind of enforced his will and was a leader, and to me just kind of put the team on his back. And that kind of, in my mind, I was like, okay, he might have just solidified this, you know, here, this tournament might have just been it, where it's like he's taken the step forward. And poor Byfield's sitting there getting pushed down to the fourth line. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's where Lafreniere was last year, kind of thing, right? Your day's going to come, kid, you know?
Right.
But
they're almost a year apart, right? Like they're 10 months apart, I guess.
Yeah. So I think Byfield's in August. So he is actually one of the younger guys. And he's a great player, but you know, his time will come. You know, I think Byfield should go back to junior and then hopefully just play World Junior and be one of the leaders this year. And you'll see a lot more Lafreniere-like performance out of a Byfield this year with increased opportunity. Because, remember Nathan MacKinnon in his World Junior year? Like,
yes, I do.
there was a player who plays for the Habs who stole the show, and MacKinnon was buried. And it's all worked out okay for him.
Yeah, yeah, I would say so. Hey, listen, Mark, we're gonna wrap it up. It's a beautiful day outside, and I want you to be able to go out and enjoy it. You were telling me that you had patio furniture coming, so I want you to sit on your patio and enjoy that. Can you tell people where they could procure this incredible document that you guys have produced? How do they get it? How much does it cost? Where do they find it? What's give us all the details on that?
Yeah, so just go to hockeyprospect.com, and right on the front page there's it's not hard to find, where you gotta click, and we'll have all the info. If you want to go to the PDF instant download route, there's a simple link, And then there's another link. It'll take you to Amazon.ca in this case. It's not cheap when you want to get the print version for sure. Amazon likes to take their cut. So actually, we still lose quite a bit here on the print versions. But it's a service. I like print. It's a service I'd like to keep going here for the amount of people that have been really loyal and loving the print version. So we keep doing it. It's not that difficult for me to convert the PDF digital into the print version. I should note though, it's 763 pages for the PDF, and it's a mere 590 in the print, because that's the maximum I can print.
Is that as small as you could shrink the words, I guess?
No, I'm not spending that many hours to reconvert it, but yeah, it's the max page numbers they allow for that 8.5 by 11, okay, sizing. So we literally, it's 590 to the max, and that's how many we got in there. And yeah, it's been good. The sales have been good. I've been a little concerned, obviously, with this weird year and the draft not till the fall. And then obviously people financially, a lot of people in tougher times here. Right. I'm worried about my own tougher times this fall if there's no hockey, but it's looking like we'll maybe get some hockey here at some point in the fall and we'll be fine. But yeah, appreciate being on, and it's another year in the books, and we're actually just going to try and throw out some audio, and we'll get maybe the month before the draft, we'll try and really get pumped up again and talking. We might be having live viewings. I'm gonna have to redo our list. We
might have live viewings before the draft. Exactly. But I mean, the beauty of this year is that there's such a longer window for you to sell your book, because it's we have
the
months
print version. Yeah,
here.
Yeah,
yeah. Or well, yeah, any that, version really. I mean, you have it's out now. Usually, it comes out like what, like a month before the draft, 3 weeks.
Not even. So you have in the last few years. See, yeah, this year with the draft, it went back to that. The last weekend in June, it had been for about the previous three or four that week up, which kind of stinks for us, because we get it out around June 6th, 7th area, and then the draft is about the 24th. So like literally just a little over 2 weeks for all this. And especially the print version, when you want to factor in making sure you get it delivered in time, there was like a 4 or 5 day window that people just went crazy and ordered the thing. And then the PDF, obviously you have it inside 5 minutes, but yeah, it's interesting for me to watch the salesman come and just kind of, you know, the first few days were nuts as usual. And then it's just been this steady flow. And I've been really pleased about the steady flow here, both versions into July. And, you know, obviously, I hope it keeps going. And hopefully a big surge at the end, because I think there's still a lot of last minute folks out there. I know I am.
Oh, I know it for sure. And let me tell you, having looked at it today, and it's an exhaustive resource of like any draft prospect that really could matter to you. And so I highly recommend it. So that's hockeyprospect.com again. Thanks very much, Mark, for joining us. This was a great chat. And we will be back next week with our French version of Le Sport Athlétique. Marc-Antoine Godin will be back, and I will be there as well. So I will talk to you then. Bye-bye.